Hello, listeners. The following podcast is produced following the workshop Chinese Objects Outside of China, which took place at Winterthur Museum, Garden, and Library from June 5th to June 9th, 2017. The workshop is part of the Chinese Object Study Workshops program administered by the Freer Gallery of Art and the Arthur M. Sackler Gallery, the Smithsonian Museums of Asian Art, and sponsored by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. To begin this podcast, we view two different mugs that comprise a part of Winterthur's Chinese export porcelain collection. These mugs, one an opaque white Blanc de Chine, and the other a bold underglazed blue with vibrant enameling. To an untrained eye, the mugs may appear to be opposites. However, this pair shares a great deal of commonalities. An exploration of these shared attributes allows us to highlight the history of these objects and ultimately create a better understanding of how these mugs arrived here in the Winterthur collection. So how do we know these mugs are Chinese export porcelain? First, let's examine the form. Technically speaking, mugs are vessels that have a handle but do not have a lid. This distinction means both of these mugs share the same shape despite outwardly displaying unique decorative motifs. Beginning at the bottom footring, we see a bulbous shape towards the bottom of the vessel, rising gradually into a narrow ribbed neck that progresses upwards, forming the upper rim of the mug. This characteristic form has been shaped to create a specific human interaction. We want to cup the rounded base between our hands, and by doing this, the form of the vessel has indicated its actual function, primarily the act of drinking. Although the act of drinking appears a mundane clue into the story of these mugs, it in fact gives us incredible insight. Historically, all early civilizations depended on water to survive. As early cultures take shape, we begin to find remnants of cylindrical vessels at excavation sites dating as early as Neolithic China. Evidence suggests these early vessels served the practical function of holding a liquid, while the exteriors were elaborately decorated, showing a desire for aesthetic appeal. These early Chinese wares may serve as some of the inspiration for the two mugs we now see here. Although evidence is found within China connecting these mugs to a long history of cylindrical vessel production, one key factor indicates that the mugs have a heavy Western influence. The bulbous form of the mug's body is not a form native to China. It, in fact, is a form unique to areas of Northern Europe and parts of North America. These areas of the world traditionally drank beers, ales, and ciders in tankards that appear quite similar to the shape of these two mugs. Extremely comparable examples of this style exist in Europe and were often produced in a wide variety of alternative mediums. References to mugs and tankards begin quite early in Europe, with many German salt-glazed stoneware vessels dating to the 14th century. As skills with metalwork improve, metal tankards and mugs will also rise in popularity. Beginning in the 16th century, this form is produced in pewter for the common man, while wealthier patrons could acquire this type of object in a silver form. Winterthur has numerous examples of mugs and tankards in a variety of mediums throughout the galleries. With all these options available to them, why did Western buyers want Chinese export porcelain mugs? Ultimately, this question has a lot of answers. A porcelain mug would have cost significantly less than its silver counterpart. The porcelain would also have allowed for a greater range of embellishments, which were also customizable to the patron. Yet another factor to consider is the symbol of the porcelain itself. As popularity of porcelain grew, the object itself evolved into a major symbol of status within society, while also representing the exotic notions often associated with the Far East at the time. The combination of Chinese porcelain produced in a Western form provides a major indication that these mugs are definitely Chinese export porcelain. China began trading with the West as early as 1513 with Portuguese ships. By the 17th century, the Dutch had joined the China trade, quickly dominating the industry, shipping more than 3 million pieces of porcelain to Europe by 1638. As time progresses, these trade numbers steadily increase, and we begin to see Chinese potters focus on the Western market. Part of this shift towards export objects was due to imperial shifts occurring in China. The collapse of the Ming Dynasty in 1644 creates chaos and disorder within the country. As a result, imperial patronage of China's kilns dwindles, and many kilns are destroyed by civil war. Despite these difficulties, many kilns were still able to produce porcelain during the era, which is typically referred to as the transitional period. The transitional period indicates the time between the fall of the Ming until the establishment of the Qing dynasty, generally ranging from around the 1620s until approximately the 1670s. During this time, potters often encountered less imperial restrictions on porcelain. Chinese potters would take Western requests for their porcelain wares, resulting in new styles and massive cross-cultural exchange. The willingness to depict the elements that the consumer desired led to even more porcelain popularity in Europe, with traditional Chinese forms depicting imagery and armorial designs of the Western world. Porcelain that contrasted distinctly Chinese elements with clearly Western styles created porcelain that was quite exotic to the traditional European aesthetic. Unique combinations can be found throughout Chinese export porcelain showing this hybrid style that bridges together pictorial imagery from both the East and the West. So what exactly is hybrid about the Blanc de Chine mug? Blanc de Chine is a French term meaning white from China. This mug exemplifies the desirable characteristics of Blanc de Chine, having an opaque white body and an undecorated minimal aesthetic. Wares made in this specific style generally refer to the porcelain produced in China's Dehua kilns, located in the Fujian province. The beautifully even white color develops as a direct result of the clay found in this geographic region. The low amount of iron oxide in the raw clay, when fired in an oxidizing kiln atmosphere, creates a porcelain ranging from a white to an ivory color tone. The achievement of firing to this color was quite rare, making porcelain produced at Dehua highly desirable, placing it among some of the first porcelain to have ever traveled to the West. What we now consider Blanc de Chine began as early as the late Song Dynasty in the Dehua kilns. However, the height of Blanc de Chine production occurred during the 17th century as a direct result of the interest of Western traders. Given the involvement of foreign trade and the motifs exhibited on this Blanc de Chine mug, it dates to approximately the late 17th to the early 18th century. Looking at this mug, we can see that it was created using a mold. We can tell it was mold-made rather than wheel-thrown because it has distinct joining marks. The marks are most visible when we examine the inside of the vessel, showing three individual parts: the lower body, upper body, and the neck of the mug. The potter would have smoothed out these joined areas along the outside of the vessel. But if you look closely between the floral vines, you might see a slight line along the center of the vessel's body. Another major reason why a mold-made mug may have been more likely is the raised floral pattern we see along the exterior. This floral motif was created by using a mold that had the same pattern. As the potter pressed the clay into the mold, the pattern was created on the mug itself. Utilizing a mold would have made this process far quicker than producing the motif by hand. Along the rounded body, two raised floral patterns with winding leafy vines are visible. The floral design, which could be interpreted as plum blossoms, would be a traditional Chinese motif. Often viewed as an auspicious symbol, the plum blossom represented winter and the onset of the spring to come. As the plum motif moves fluidly around the body, it is interrupted by the curving handle of the vessel. As we move our eyes upward, we notice the raised ribbing of the neck. The combination of the ribbing and raised plum motif visually emphasizes the pure white hue of the glaze. The combination of a traditional Chinese raised motif with a mug form that would predominantly be found within the West helps us to visualize the merging of both Eastern and Western styles within this piece of export porcelain. The Blanc de Chine mug not only exemplifies the cross-cultural exchange of Eastern and Western porcelain styles, it marks a point in which styles would influence the production of Western-made porcelain. Some of you may have thought that this mug looked especially Western. Similar blossom motifs exist in German stoneware, along with examples found in English glass and silver. However, the molded floral pattern, along with the white porcelain body, is reminiscent of styles we associate with Meissen. Although we tend to think that the Blanc de Chine mug is visually close to the styles represented by Meissen wares, it does in fact date far earlier than Meissen dated mugs. While this export mug dates close to the late 1600s into the early 1700s, the examples of Meissen displaying the raised plum blossom motif from the Winterthur collection date to approximately the mid-1700s. Yet another strikingly similar plum blossom comparison can be linked to porcelain from the English Bow Factory, with mugs closely mirroring the export pattern as late as the 1770s. These comparisons clearly prove that a Chinese potter was inspired by a Western form and crafted a unique mug to sell on the export market. The mug would have been the early inspiration for later styles produced by Meissen and Bow within the European market, marking this style's immense popularity. In this instance, we can see that porcelain influence was not one-sided, but rather a fluid exchange between East and West occurring in both directions. Let's shift focuses and look at our other export mug. This mug appears quite different from the Blanc de Chine mug. This mug is mostly wheel-thrown rather than molded and therefore displays painted embellishments. So what part of this mug's decoration indicates a combination of Eastern and Western designs? To begin with, this mug is detailed by an underglazed blue that would then have had colorful enamels added on top. The blue underglaze was achieved by applying a cobalt color. This method of detailing required a potter to apply the cobalt to the surface prior to the object being glazed and fired. This resulted in a design that was not only visible, but extremely durable. Cobalt underglaze technology was first used as early as the Tang Dynasty, and quickly became one of the most prevalent underglazes used by Chinese potters. It is commonly referred to as blue and white porcelain. The Jingdezhen kilns, where this specific mug was most likely produced, were extremely adept at working with underglazed cobalt. Jingdezhen was a major kiln site located in Jiangxi province that produced pottery as early as the 6th century. Throughout China's history, Jingdezhen primarily functioned as an imperial kiln, but it also produced a large quantity of export objects, earning the nickname the Porcelain City. Now that we have an understanding of how blue underglaze works, we can establish that the cobalt motif would have been the first decoration applied to the mug. It is clear that the blue underglaze was not the only source of decorative painting. The cobalt was used to outline the distinct floral arrangements that we see detailing the rounded body of the mug, along with the projecting handle. Each floral arrangement shows the same flowers in varying stages of bloom, and if we move the mug around, we can actually see the subtle differences. Let's examine one of these floral arrangements. We can see soft lines of cobalt outlining the motif, centering around what appears to be a red lotus. In contrast to some of the loose blue brushstrokes, the brushstrokes comprising the red lotus are defined and precisely applied. The lotus is a traditional Chinese symbol, often associated with purity, making this floral choice a symbolic reflection of an Eastern motif. The lotus itself has a visible gradient color effect and is trimmed in gold detailing along each petal. The differences in brushstrokes gives us another clue to the history of this mug. The application of the underglazed blue displaying loose brushwork and the red enamel lotus showing more defined brushwork may have been created by two different hands. Looking beyond the central lotus, we can see long flowers peek out from behind with pale greens, purples, and yellows visible on the petals. Some of these flowers can be identified as daffodils, a flower that would have been popular in Europe, perhaps indicating a symbolic reference to a Western motif. Ultimately, the colored enamels on the flower would have been added after the initial firing process that set the underglaze blue. Often referred to as enamel or overglaze decoration, the colorful flowers would be painted onto the surface and then the mug would be refired at a relatively low temperature to ensure the color melts into the glaze, adhering the design to the porcelain body. Techniques like this originated in China as early as the 12th century, but did not reach their full potential until the 17th century, when we begin to see full ranges of color along with a mastery of painterly brushwork. The range of colors we see here, along with the painterly effect seen on the red tones of the lotus flower, point to a solid understanding of these overglaze techniques. If we flip the mug over, we also can see a rain marker. The mark is a Lingzhi fungus mark, which was used during the later reign of the Kangxi Emperor. Typically, we date this mark to around the 1680s, up until the turn of the century. These hints, along with the knowledge that export wares displaying an underglazed blue motif, rose in popularity from the 17th century into the 18th century, helps us to provide this mug with an approximate date of 1700 to 1750. This era would have had the technical skills available, along with the knowledge of Western designs and the availability to sell directly to the export market. Moving up the body of the mug, we can see a fretwork pattern banding where the body and the neck meet. The brushwork in this area is also quite soft and almost appears blurred within the pattern. Progressing even higher, we can also see some thin red and blue lines along the upper rim. Although we know that a Chinese potter would have been capable of creating a perfect line, these lines are not extremely straight. Just like the fretwork band, they are rather blurred. The manner in which the colors throughout the mug were applied suggests multiple applications. The original underglazed cobalt blue lines would have come first. The lack of precision within the brushwork indicates that the ornamentation was rather quickly applied. Porcelain made for the export market was not expected to maintain the high standards of porcelain that were typically used within the domestic Chinese market, reiterating that the mug is an export ware which would have been produced rapidly for the growing Western market. After examining the decorative motif on the mug, we can conclusively deduct that this is export porcelain. If we needed any further evidence, we can simply look to the form, which we have already established was inspired by a tankard. In fact, this mug's design looks similar to decorative floral motifs found on both English silver and German stoneware. In this instance, the pattern has been translated onto a porcelain form. We know originally this mug would have solely had the underglazed blue floral motif that we now see as an outline. However, we can see that it was later altered because it is now filled with color. The colorful overglaze enamels that we now see giving the flowers vivid hues would have been added later in the mug's life. The question is, how much later? This later application of overglaze enamels could have been done in China, but it is more likely that the overglaze enamels were done in Europe after the mug was exported. Often, the addition of more colors or painted details was a way to refresh the existing piece. Perhaps this mug had additional color added in Europe to improve the original design. Evidence from this era also indicates that individuals would purchase items to match an existing set of porcelain. We can possibly think of this as a more economical way to update a porcelain collection or even replace a broken piece of a porcelain set rather than totally repurchasing. The colorful effect we now see on the mug's body is what is known as clobbering. Typically, clobbering is thought of as a highly decorated, overly filled motif, or a vessel with additional embellishments added. However, many of these porcelain have simply utilized a Chinese export as a canvas for further fine decoration. A critical observation of these two mugs can really inform us of their journey from China to the Western porcelain market. The exterior detailing, along with the mug's distinct form, reveal the kilns where these mugs originated, an approximate date of production, and indicates that they were produced solely for European sales. These clues reveal the vast amount of combined Eastern and Western designs within each mug, and ultimately the creation of a distinct aesthetic that generated universal appeal. It was this industry that allowed the mugs to travel from east to west and eventually become a part of Winterthur. When acquired, they were both the first of their kind within the Winterthur collection, with the Blanc de Chine mug joining the collection in 1975, and the underglazed blue mug acquired slightly earlier in 1973. Together, this pair represents not only clues into the vast history of Chinese export porcelain, but also an example of an unusual mug form that showcases a hybrid aesthetic of both the Eastern and Western world during a time of early global interaction.